Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
I'm Ben Kiefer, and this is a special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. If you've driven along I-80 between Iowa City and Des Moines in the past year, you've probably noticed the dozens of wind turbines being built along the interstate. Those are part of a $3.6 billion Mid-American wind energy expansion project. Now, the Iowa Utilities Board approved another $922 million wind energy project late last year, and with its approval, Mid-American is positioned to provide its customers with 100% of their energy from renewable sources in the next few years. Sometimes you encounter the bodies and limbs of these behemoths up close while driving on the interstate, and if you've driven past these wind turbine parts in transit, the sections of the tower and those enormous blades on trucks being transported to a construction site, you do have a sense of the sheer size of these things. So, have you ever wondered how those parts become a fully functional wind turbine, what they look like on the inside, or what it's like to work as one of the engineers who climbs way up in the towers when they need to be serviced? Well, we wondered too, and so last fall, producer Lindsay Moon and I climbed a turbine at Mid-America's North English Wind Farm. Now, the first thing we did when we arrived on site at the project's headquarters in Montezuma was to meet everyone climbing that day, Jeff Greenwood, Media Relations Manager for Mid-American, Kyle Scott, a Wind Generation Supervisor, and Bill Nosbisch. Nosbisch was our colorful guide for the day and is Mid-American's Manager of Wind Generation Engineering and Asset Management.
We'll be climbing a Vestas 95-meter tower. We'll be using climb assists. And we'll be climbing the four of us. I will go first, our three guest climbers, and then Kyle will bring up the rear. As we climb, we'll stop at each deck and catch our breath and assess the situation and continue on. When we get to the top, we'll get up there, we'll stick our heads out the top, and we'll answer any questions you have along the way.
So, Bill, how many times have you been up a tower like this?
You can put three zeros after the number.
Okay, very good. So, in terms of height, this is, we can think of this as like a football field stood on its end.
This is 311 feet to the center of the blade.
Okay. So a little over a football field.
But the problem is you're not running that way horizontally, you're running vertically. So it's I like to put it as running around the track six times, not jogging, running, and you can't stop.
Running around a quarter-mile track six times. That's about what the energy you need, the exertion you need. Okay. I think we're ready to do this, Lindsay, huh?
I think so. We'll see.
So what we're going to climb with is steel-toed shoes, long pants, fall arrest vest, cable arrestor, lanyards on your side, hard hat, safety glasses, and gloves.
How much does all that equipment weigh?
That will probably be about 20 pounds. I carry extra ropes, so I'll have an extra set of ropes on, an extra climb assist, and some other equipment. Mine's closer to 50 pounds.
Just put on there. Okay, so I'm...
This is an X2, but if you're going to have an X3, it'll be similar. You'll have that there.
Okay, getting geared up here. Okay, each little piece that I've added to my vest here and my harness is making me a little heavier. Helmet's coming on here. I feel good, Bill. We've got a lot of safety equipment here.
We're not done yet.
We're not done yet, you say.
So, Jeff, I understand this is your
first time.
It is correct.
So, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm looking forward to it.
What are your thoughts as you, with us, have your premier climb?
Well, I'm looking forward to an experience like this. I think it'll be really interesting once we get to the top. It's getting to the top that's going to be the challenge, and climbing 27 stories or the equivalent of straight up is going to be a challenge, and I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, you and me both, and Lindsay as well. But, you know, I feel in good hands with Bill. He looks like a solid stand-up sort of guy. Wouldn't let us down if we got into trouble.
Only 4 feet. That's as far as you can fall down with your lanyards.
Once we were fitted with the harnesses, helmets, and understood the safety gear we'd be using, we drove to the tower site. Standing beneath the tower, just a few feet away from the steps up to the entrance, we got a more in-depth rundown of the specs of the turbine we'd been climbing.
These blades are 177 feet long each. When you combine the two, it's 360 feet, yes? I know 177 and 177 don't make 360, but in the very center there, you'll see a device. It's called a hub. That's where all the hydraulics are that pitch the blades. That takes up some room. This is a 2-megawatt turbine, so we can produce 2 megawatts at the right wind speed. We're also at a construction site, so we'll need to take that into account as we're walking around. Normally, you wouldn't see dirt alongside the roads. This would either be hay ground or beans or corn or whatever, but they're restoring the land so the farmer can use it properly. He'll make it completely level, then he'll come by and rip it up so he can decompact it so the farmer can plant. I see there's grass there, so the farmer might just put hay in, and it's totally up to the farmer. The roads are 16 foot wide. The foundation on there is 10 feet deep and about 100 foot diameter.
Do these wind turbines, towers, do they have names or numbers? What's this one called?
This one's Tower 93. At the end, above the doors, or if the doors are not facing the right way at the road, there'll be a number high up, 93. We'll also work with the local county response folks and have 911 addresses assigned to each turbine. So in the event of an emergency, we can get an emergency crews here.
So there's no other 93, number 93 in the state, or no other mid-American energy tower named 93?
Yes, there is. There happens to be a whole bunch of them. But this is called North English. There is only one North English Tower 93.
So we're going to have to take 263 ladder.
For an 80-meter. Rungs. This one's going to be over 300 ladder rungs.
Okay, good. And between, since this is a 95-meter tower, we have how many little stations between?
Should be five platforms, and they're not for us to rest. There's work there. The first platform is going to be where the bottom and the second section meet. The next one will be where the second section and the third section meet. And the next one will be where the third and the top section meet. And then there'll be a transition deck in there where they go to different types of cables. So they don't do it for our comfort.
Okay, they do it. How old is this particular tower?
This tower, I think, is about 8 hours old. No, it's a brand new... this is one of the first commissioned towers in this park. This park isn't even totally commissioned. If you look around, you can see tower sex well when you get to the top, you will. They don't even have the tops on them.
There's a crane over there.
Yep. So this wind farm is completely under construction.
Okay, so this tower is less than a year old? Or?
Oh, this tower is less than 3 months old.
Okay.
So we'll be climbing. We're going to have fun. Let's get suited up, get dressed up. At any time, stop and ask questions. I will also demonstrate how to rest on the ladder. So if you have to do it, and what we'll do is we'll climb the first section. The next section, we'll assess everybody. And depending on how everybody is in the next section, I may stop, I may not stop. We'll just play it by ear and see how we go. All right, let's get dressed.
Okay, here's my vest. Weighs about, I don't know, 7-8 pounds, I'd say.
As you've already guessed, this will be a real workout, this climb. So before we put on our harnesses and climbing gear, we did some stretching to prepare our hamstrings, forearms, and wrists for this strenuous climb. Now, seasoned technicians who work for MidAmerican can make the climb of more than 300 feet. This is straight up ladder rungs in the center of these towers, up to three times a day when servicing or repairs are needed. Now, once we had on all our gear, our harnesses, producer Lindsay Moon realized she was a little nervous about what we were about to do.
So I don't feel nervous, but I did go to just take a picture. My hands are shaking.
Let me see if mine are. No, I don't. No, I don't think so. Looking at it, it looks high. It does look high. Okay, here we are. Number 93. Piles at the top here. That's where we're headed.
Now, you'll notice once inside the tower, it gets a bit harder to hear each other. There's a lot of echo in that mammoth cylindrical chamber. and the ClimAssist motor is a bit noisy when it's turned on. Bill was first. He climbed, rung by rung, up to that first platform, about three stories up. I followed, and Lindsay came next.
Go, Ben! Go, Ben!
Now, despite the attention we'd paid to securing our sound gear amidst all this other gear we had on, my recorder got loose. It toppled out of the pocket of my vest just as I reached the top of the first section. I was so focused on getting off the ladder and onto that first platform, I didn't even notice it at the time. The small recorder plummeted three stories straight down and hit Lindsay on the head.
You reached the first level, Lindsay. How are you feeling?
Fine. My blood is pumping.
That's good.
That Tascam falling scared me.
How far off the ground was I when it fell?
I don't know.
Okay, come on all the way through first. You get on the other side of the door.
Sorry, Lindsay. Thank goodness for the safety gear we've been outfitted with.
So Lindsay, we've just gone up, I don't know, 20 ladder rungs. So this is the smallest section that we're in, this very echoey chamber. It's about, I don't know, a diameter of, what would you say, like 12 foot across?
All right, so we're at the top of the base, is what it's called. This is the base section.
As we stood resting on the first platform, Bill told us about the huge lug bolts we could see all around the perimeter. These hold together the sections of giant steel cylinders that make up the tower. Let's take a break from our climb for a moment. We'll come back to it. While we were at the wind farm site, we wanted to learn more about the towers and other wind development projects across the state. Adam Jablonski is director of renewable energy development for MidAmerican. I asked him to give us a rundown of how this wind farm we visited fits into the bigger picture.
Well, this is actually part of our Wind 11 project. It's a 2,000 megawatt project we started planning a couple years ago. So this is 200 megawatts of that 2,000 megawatt project. The Wind 11 project should be complete by the end of next year. And then the Wind 12 project you're referencing is another about approximately 600 megawatts. We plan to install next year and in 2020. And then, by the end of 2020 or in 2021, we hope to meet our customers' electricity usage on an annual basis with the amount of renewable energy we produce over the course of a year.
So 100% of the energy for MidAmerican customers would be renewable and would be produced by the wind.
That's correct. And it's over an annual basis, so we'll produce as much renewable energy in a year as they will use over that course of that year.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe this is a question for your colleague, Jarrod, more than you, but let me just ask it. So we were just up in the top, in the nacelle, the box up there, where the energy is actually, the kinetic energy is actually translated into electrical energy. Where is that going? It's going down the tower. We saw a big black cable going down next to our ladder, right next to where we were going up and down. Where's that energy going?
Yeah, so it is produced up in the tower, up in the nacelle of the generator. It travels down the tower through the cables, and what you don't see underground everywhere are cables connecting the towers together, the turbines together, and then from there they gather and they go to an electric substation that is on the transmission lines. You know, you see the big electrical transmission lines traveling across Iowa, across the cities and the counties. So it gets onto that transmission system there, and then it gets onto the distribution network. And then where it goes, no one knows exactly where an electron goes, but it goes where it's first needed locally, and will keep traveling down the line until it reaches a spot where it's needed.
So we're standing next to a tower, but I look off in the distance, maybe a half mile away. Ours is not generating any power now because we were up there, and you can't have it going, so it's in a sort of a pause mode or a slow turn mode. When I'm looking across here, and we have a, I don't know if it's a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind, maybe 10 mile an hour wind, gusts up to 15. That's turning at a pretty good clip. How much would you say that tower is generating right now? How many households of energy?
Yeah, so these have these turbines, these 2 megawatt turbines, have the capacity they were power about 800 average Iowa homes over the course of a year. Each turbine alone will provide the power to meet the needs of about 800 average Iowa homes.
And we're at this newly built or in progress wind farm. How many of these towers are there here or going to be?
The North English project will consist of 100 of these wind turbines.
Okay. So the energy produced here, you've got to transmit it somewhere. So that's as big a challenge as capturing the energy, right? Because you've got to get, what is it, like copper wire. Let's just say it's a huge copper wire. You've got to get it to the big cities.
Yeah, correct. So there are miles, hundreds of miles of cable underground that you don't see that take it to the electric transmission grid. So on that grid, and that's kind of how you situate some of these wind farms. It has to be close to an electric transmission line. The one here is just south of us, and that's where the substation is. So that substation collects it and puts it on that transmission line. Part of the challenge is you have to site them close to a transmission line, and then another challenge is finding a transmission line that has the capacity to take that wind energy and transmit it to customers.
Adam, when we talk about wind energy, people see all the pluses here, but some of the minuses that people see are what they're doing visually to our landscape, and also a lot of bird lovers, animal lovers out there. What is the threat there, and how are you minimizing that?
Yeah, so previously I did mention all the studies we do. We do a minimum of a year long of environmental studies prior to the construction of the project. So we identify where all the bald eagle nests are, where the potential habitat is for bats. So we identify all of those sensitive areas, and we make sure we site back from those areas. We're also lucky in Iowa that, you know, most of the land is disturbed already. You know, we're not, you know, destroying native habitat. It's crop ground. It gets disturbed on a regular basis, so there's really not a lot of habitat to start with. But we do identify that habitat. We stay far away from it to help minimize those impacts. And then even after the operations of the project, we continue our studies and our monitoring of those impacts. And then if there are any operational adjustments we need to make to help minimize those impacts, we'll go ahead and do that. We work closely with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the DNR in making sure they're sited appropriately, and then on any mitigation measures.
Are you able to, you have, of course, Mid-American has plenty of coal-fired power plants here. Because of the expansion of wind farms like this one, are you able to turn off the lights on some of those coal-fired plants?
We haven't yet, only because wind is an intermittent resource. The wind doesn't blow all the time. So we need to make sure we have our base load power, whether that's coal or natural gas, to be able to produce power when the wind isn't blowing. That being said, because of the vast amounts of wind generation we have been able to, you know, kind of throttle down our coal plants. So it really cuts down the times that we do need to run those coal plants or natural gas plants that we have.
Mm-hmm. Iowa is second or third in terms of wind power when you look at the statistics in a certain way. Iowa's way up there. Is Iowa especially windy state? Why is this? Is this the politics of the state? Is it the geography, the wind, or what is it that Iowa becomes a leader among 50 states?
Basically all that you said. So, yeah, it's a very friendly climate politically in Iowa for wind. We do have a very good wind resource here in welcoming landowners in the state, and that has allowed us to become, you know, number one per capita on the amount of renewable energy produced in the state. And I think we're second or third in the total installed capacity. So we keep fighting with Oklahoma or California, kind of in that range, and Texas is number one.
Adam, tell me a little bit about how far wind generation technology has come. Towers are getting taller. Now we were up in a 95-meter tower. Before, they were 80 meters. The blades are longer. What's going on there in the evolution of this technology?
Yep. So with our first wind project in 2004, our hub heights where the nacelle was actually 65 meters. So we've gone since 2004 to present, and we're at 95 meters. And the reason for that is the higher you go, the more wind resource there is, the more renewable energy you'll produce. Also, when we went from 2004, there were much shorter blades. We're getting very long blades here, 177 feet long blades here. So that allows you to capture the wind much better. So as far as efficiency goes, our projects back in 2004 were about 20% efficient. They had a 20% capacity factor. These new wind turbines we're putting up will have about a 47% capacity factor. So that's what it's come in the past 14 years, quite an improvement in efficiency.
So when you say 47%, does that mean it's you can measure the kinetic energy of the wind and it's actually converting 47% of that wind power into electricity?
Yeah, so that capacity factor is really measured. So what is the potential it could produce over the course of a year? If it was just running full bore, you know, 24/7, that would be 100%. But, you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time. It's intermittent, so it actually comes down to 47% of what it's actually able to produce over a year.
So we know we get energy for our homes, our businesses, from wind power. What are some of the other economic benefits we might not realize here in Iowa when we drive by a wind farm?
Yeah, so when we site these, the landowners, they get an easement payment, an annual easement payment. So we've got 27 projects in 27 counties across Iowa. So that's about 3,000 landowners who have partnered with us since 2004. And last year in 2017, we paid more than $16 million in annual payments. And that annual payment over all the wind farms and all the landowners is going to continue to go up over the coming years. So that's one thing. It helps farmers diversify their income, you know, when the crop market's low, like it is right now, it really helps out. Another thing, too, is we pay an enormous amount of property taxes on these. You know, we're the number one property taxpayer in the state. So last year, again, I mentioned 27 counties where we have wind farms. So we're making significant property tax payments to those counties. Last year was over $19 million we paid to over 20 counties in the state of Iowa. You know, when you look at the way counties use those funds, you know, like 50% goes to schools, you know, that goes to roads, infrastructure, safety, hospitals, and stuff like that. So it really does help the local community outside of just those who get the direct benefit from the easement payments.
Thank you, Adam Jablonski, on a nice wind energy day. It's a good day for wind energy today, isn't it?
Yeah, if you hear a lot of the background noise, that's the reason we're here. The wind's blowing good. Get that great wind resource in Iowa.
Adam Jablonski, Director of Renewable Energy Development for Mid-American Energy, talking with me at the base of Tower 93 at the North English Wind Farm Project near Montezuma, Iowa. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this is a special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. When we come back, producer Lindsay Moon and I continue our climb up to the top of this state-of-the-art Iowa wind turbine, right up to what's called the nacelle. That's the rectangular structure where the large primary components, such as the main axle, the gearbox, the generator, transformer, and control system are. It's where the electricity is actually generated. And then, tethered to the structure with lanyards, we even get to climb through a hatch up onto the top of this wind turbine tower nacelle out into the open, nearly 30 stories above the Iowa landscape. That's still to come. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
Okay, you want to give me a last checkout? I think this is good, Kyle.
Yep.
Good. Okay. Up we go.
I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're back midstream in this special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, or should I say mid-climb for today's program. Last fall, IPR producer Lindsay Moon and I climbed to the top of a wind turbine tower over 300 feet straight up. If you've driven along I-80 between Iowa City and Des Moines in the past year, or in other parts of the state, you've noticed the dozens of wind turbines being built along the interstate. Those are part of a giant wind energy expansion project, and the goal is for Iowans who receive power from MidAmerican Energy to receive 100% of their energy from renewable sources in the next few years. During this hour, we've been learning about wind energy technology, and to do this, we're climbing a tower, Tower 93, located outside Montezuma, Iowa, at the North English Wind Farm.
Look at that form. Such good form. You think this will be an Olympic sport sometime?
Sure.
Why not?
Might be able to enter.
How fast can you scamper up an Iowa wind turbine tower?
I can get up in probably less than 5 minutes.
Less than 5 minutes? You'd be breathing at the end,
yeah.
Breathing heavy.
Yep. I'm breathing after just three sections. But you just keep pushing through.
Nearing the top, well, the last little section. And it's getting easier, Bill.
Yeah.
To get it figured out.
One more step up. There we go.
Okay, I can see daylight out there. We're almost there, aren't we? So, a little bit smaller.
Across Iowa's landscape, MidAmerican Energy uses different brands of wind turbines, Vestas, GE, and Siemens. Now, each turbine tower is constructed in sections, and there are landing platforms installed where the work is done. On this particular day, we climbed a ladder straight up the middle of the tower, on the inside. I have to say, if you can imagine, it's sort of like climbing up the inside of a giant metal soda straw. Except, as you climb higher, the sections of the tower get smaller and smaller in diameter. And all that climbing eventually leads us to the nacelle. Now, that's the rectangular structure at the top of the turbine tower. It houses the technical guts of this wind power machine. And all of it needs maintenance. Bill Nosbisch talked to us about the components that the nacelle houses.
All right, so this is the generator. This is what makes all electricity. It's connected to the gearbox that we looked at from before. And then Kyle was sitting on the low-speed shaft that's connected to the blades. This is all the electronics. Behind this door, which we can't open because it's considered a confined space, and we need a day's training, let you guys in there, is the transformer I told you about. Okay? So, if you want, one at a time, go around to the front, and Kyle will meet you up there, and let you stick your head out the top and look.
Okay, we're going that way to where the blade
where
is.
Where he was, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's just opening it up.
Before the climb, we'd been told once at the very top, we'd get to peek our heads out of the hatch on the ceiling of the nacelle into the open and look out across the landscape. What actually happened was much more exciting. We climbed up out of the hatch onto the roof of the nacelle. All of this while each of us were tethered to the structure with safety lanyards.
As soon as he gets up there, why don't you go ahead? I'll get to go, so...
But okay, one at a time, though.
One at a time, yeah.
Hey, yeah, come on.
Okay, there should be a little yellow thing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my God, Lindsay. We're on the top here, Lindsay.
We are up here.
Wow. Now, whenever we drive through the Iowa countryside, we can say we were on top of this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What are you feeling, Lindsay?
Yesterday for my birthday, my roommate gave me a lucky $2 bill, and I'm breathing and thinking
Whoa. Crazy. Oh my god. It is beautiful.
How are you feeling now that you're up here?
I'm feeling good. I got a little bit heebie-jeebies here, but... Should I wait for you guys or can I go down?
No, we're getting the other guy up. He's not in the party yet.
Oh, okay. Here we are on the top, outside of Montezuma, Iowa. This is a wind farm, and Lindsay Moon and I are sitting on the top of a what?
95-meter Vestas 2.0 megawatt turbine.
We're sitting on the top of a turbine, the tower, and we're over 100 meters or 100 meters
in...
95 meters in the air, and you can just look around and see all the countryside. It looks like you're in a skyscraper in the middle of a field.
While sitting on top of the nacelle, Bill reminded us of his earlier comment about what it was like, and I couldn't agree more. Definitely felt like I could look to the west and see yesterday, and look to the east and see tomorrow. Nearly 30 stories up on top of the wind tower, we noticed an odd, chilling sensation, and it takes a moment to figure out. The entire tower is actually swaying. It's swaying a bit back and forth in the gentle wind. So it was with some relief that Lindsay and I climbed back down through the hatch into the nacelle.
Here we are. Unhook me, Lindsay, so I can kiss the ground. I'll unhook myself, actually. Let me get outside the safety door. Door is closed.
How do you feel?
I feel winded. I don't know how you felt about it, but I thought it was harder coming down than going up. Do you think so?
100%.
Yeah? Okay, good. We're in agreement there. Let me get this off.
All clear. Okay. Come down. I'm off the line.
Oh, I'm a little ball of sweat right now. Gotta go out into the breeze.
Once everyone in our climbing group was safely back on the ground, I wanted to revisit some of the questions I'd asked Bill along the climb. He reached the bottom first and was waiting for me when I got to the ground.
Bill, I'm just down from the climb. You've had a little time to rest. I'm still a little bit winded. We're standing at the base of this tower right now. Tell us what's up at the top. What is in the room that we are at? And then at one point we were sitting on top of the room, actually outside. What's in there?
Well, what we refer to that room up there is called a nacelle, and it contains all the components. It starts off with the low-speed shaft that connects to the blades. That's what you stood on when you exited and got on top. Behind that is that gearbox, which weighs approximately 53,000 pounds, and that has a 90-to-1 rotation. It speeds up. It changes mechanical energy so it can speed that generator that you saw up there. That's a 2-megawatt generator. It speeds it up 90-to-1, and it produces at 2 megawatts. And then behind that room that I pointed out, is where the transformer then steps it up to 34,500 where it comes down the tower.
Okay, so a technician going up here has to go up how many of these towers a day in a typical day?
Well, it depends on the repair. You know, like some maintenances last 2-3 days. So they'll come up, work their day, come down, go back up, work their day, come down. Some of them will go up 2, maybe 3 towers in a day. We don't usually ask for more than 3 towers. Very seldom do we ask for 3.
This is really interesting. We were out on the top here. It really felt a little bit like I will never be in space, but we have a lanyard connected to this thing that seems to be just floating in space. And so I imagine repairs are a little bit like going out into space. You're tethered to this larger thing more or less in the air.
Safety is number one. If you can't do the job safely, you don't do it. And as you see, as we emphasize through everything, if you could fall, we're going to be tied off. If you can't tie off, then we're not going to do it. So the work always is contingent around that. And of course, it slows the work down. But in reality, not getting hurt, then we don't have to deal with all those issues and repercussions, plus lost time, plus the injury, plus being hurt, plus, you know, not having fun with your family at home. That's what's important. So we stress that safety first.
Okay, so we were up there, I think, start to finish, about 2 hours. Is that right?
Yeah, I've had climbs anywhere from 2 hours to 4 hours. It took us a little while to get going to get the equipment so we could climb safely, but it was about a two-hour climb.
Mm-hmm. So when people climb, technicians obviously are trained to do this. What do people find the biggest challenges? I, for instance, found that I didn't expect coming down was harder than going up. Going up, of course, we had the assist. I suppose it would have been difficult going up if I hadn't had the assist. Much more difficult than going down.
Yeah. Without the climb assist, it is almost three times as hard. It's almost unbearable is not the right word, but because we do it. We have several hundred turbines without climb assist, and we climb those all the time. But the climb assist certainly helps. The challenge is to always assess what you're doing and make sure we do it safe, because as you saw, it's a very dangerous job up there. So we have to assess what we're doing. As you saw, we always sent somebody in before you to make sure the area was clean, the area was clear, and the area was safe.
Bill, I understand you accompanied Senator Joni Ernst on a tower climb not too long ago.
Well, that's correct. It was a little while ago. Me and another fellow employee, we climbed up, and she climbed that 80-meter tower without a climb assist. I like it to say that if Joni Ernst is mad, I wouldn't want to meet her in the alley. That's all I'm going to say.
So a senator in excellent physical condition going up an 80-meter tower. Well, I guess one thing I can say is we went up a 95-meter tower. So there, Senator Ernst.
I don't know if I'm going to buy that story, but go ahead with it.
When you have novices like Lindsay and I go up these towers, what are the typical things that you watch out for that can get novices hung up here? What do you watch for?
I look for their attitude when they're climbing and how they're climbing. When they start getting sloppy with their feet, then you know they're getting really tired. And then when they quit looking up, you know that they're getting scared. Or when they don't look up as often as they used to, you know they're getting super tired. So you just look for their first set of stairs when they're nice and fresh, is nice short section, tells you what this person is. And when they quit doing that, there's something wrong.
And you are certified to be a rescuer in this situation. You could have rescued me or Lindsay had we had problems. Fortunately, we did not. You've had rescues before?
We've had some minor rescuing. I wouldn't say that we did a real rescue or somebody needed, you know, emergency response or anything. We've had people get tied up in the ropes to where they couldn't go forward, couldn't go down, and we had to go assist. And that's about the extent of it.
Tell us about the safety and why you would, once we were on top, we climbed outside of the box, the nacelle, I guess. We were on top of what seemed like a boat or a top of a large, like, bus, coach bus or something, sitting on the roof. It seemed like to me we had our lanyards attached. Why do technicians go out there?
Well, like I pointed out there are several pieces of equipment on the top. There's the anemometer, the sonic, the wind vane, the FAA light, and access to some of the blade inspections. So there'll be times when people need to access to work on this equipment.
You can go up there with winds up to what speed? Because I imagine if you have some good winds, you don't want to be up there.
Yes. At 15 meters of wind, we are no longer allowed to exit the nacelle, so we can't be on top at 15 meters.
Okay, so 15 meters in miles per hour is?
That's approximately about 25.
Okay, 25, yeah, I don't want to be up there with 25-mile-an-hour winds. Does the top of the tower, when there are winds, does that sway at all? Does it move?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen it sway a couple feet, and if you guys had stopped and leaned against the wall, you would have felt the tower moving even at this wind speed.
So the tower was moving when we were up there, just we didn't know it.
Yes, your producer noticed it when she was sitting on the top, because every time the wind picked up in a gust, she gripped a little bit harder on the tie-offs.
Well, I want to thank you both for not pointing that out to me. I felt pretty darn secure up there, but that was very nice. So these blades are enormous, 170 how many feet?
These are on these Vestas towers are 177 feet long.
Okay. What are they made out of?
Fiberglass, balsa wood with a carb. These towers have a carbon fiber backbone on it, but it's very thin. It's mostly fiberglass and balsa wood.
And to do maintenance, you can actually go inside the blades?
Yes, on some maintenances, and maintenance is the wrong word. All that's inside that blaze that's hollow is there's a 4-aught cable or a solid copper wire that runs down to all the lightning pucks that attach. So in case of a lightning strike, they might go in there and look to make sure that the cable's indeed still intact or hasn't been burnt. Or they might do some inspections on the inside of the blade. But they won't go all, about halfway down is about as far as they go.
Will you get any storm damage here, hail damage, that you might have to replace a blade?
We can have lightning strikes that will damage a blade beyond repair. We've also had lightning strikes to where we can repair them in place. Leading edge erosion is a big one. You know, you got a fiberglass blade cutting through the wind and the hail and the ice, as you iterated to, and it can cause wear that we do repairs.
This is a special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Producer Lindsay Moon and I are outside of Montezuma, Iowa, in central part of the state, a new wind farm being erected by MidAmerican Energy. And we have the joy, also the challenge today, of climbing a wind tower, one of these towers that you pass on the interstate or one of the roads, actually going up into the nacelle, or the box, I guess it is called as well. Bill, this is obviously a growing sector, energy sector. MidAmerican is investing a lot in here. And so the people who repair, do maintenance on these turbines, there's a need for workers there, a need for technicians. What would you look for in a technician who would have to climb 2 or 3 of these a day?
Well, obviously, all the local community colleges have 2-year degrees in wind technology. All the big ones, DMAC does, many of them. That certainly doesn't hurt. But you also look for a mechanical aptitude. I mean, an electrical aptitude. These are computer PLC-controlled devices. So we have wrenches that need to be turned, grease that needs to be fixed, and PLCs that need to be watched after.
Okay, so we're standing right next to the, let me tap on this. This is, we're right at the base here. Yeah, okay, so this is about, looks to be about 12 foot in diameter. What's it made out of, this tower?
This is solid steel.
Okay, solid steel all the way up.
All the way up.
And it can still flex when the wind.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is going up over 300 feet. Straight up, what does it look like under the ground? How is this not tipping over?
Well, you have what I like to call an inverted mushroom foundation. And if you look out, you got about 15 foot, 20 foot out here to the edge of the rock. And the foundation does extend that far. It's over 300, almost 315, 320 cubic yards of concrete underneath us.
Okay. And how deep does it go?
10 feet.
And that's enough to hold this up?
Absolutely.
So, Bill, this is late September. It's a nice cool day, maybe up to 70 degrees today. But these towers, of course, are here in the dead of winter. They're also here in horribly humid August days when we have, temperatures in the 90s or even 100. Have you been in the towers then?
I've been in the towers everywhere from 0 degrees to 100 degrees.
So what are the extremes like?
My feeling personally is the colder it gets under 20 degrees, the air gets thinner, it seems like, and it's harder to breathe, and everything's cold, and everything's just, I don't like climbing in the cold. But on the other end of the spectrum, when it's 95 degrees out and humid, you've also had a gearbox that's been running, so it's very warm to the touch also. So you can get quite miserable when you're up there climbing. So breaks and breaks often.
So somebody thinking about going into this line of work, or perhaps we have a parent or someone, a kid looking, mechanically sort of gifted and understanding systems like this. What kind of living can you make out here working with wind farms?
Well, a senior wind turbine can make well in excess of $30 an hour. Supervisors can make up in the $60,000, $70,000, and managers, you know, the sky's the limit. You know, $100,000, $150,000 for senior level. It's not unheard of.
Bill, you know, you brought us safely down the tower. It was a 2-hour climb up to the top, sitting out for a few minutes to enjoy the wind, the landscape, and everything, and brought us down. It occurred to me this, you know, adventure vacations are really in. Do you think you would suggest to Mid-American that people actually, you could sell tickets to have people climb these towers?
It is an interesting view from the top, but as you saw, the biggest concern is safety, and I would be really concerned with that. We evaluate everybody that goes up to make sure, A, they can, and B, that they can follow simple safety directions. So while you guys were outstanding climbers, no complaints whatsoever. It's just not cut out for everybody.
I'm Ben Kiefer, and this has been a special edition of River to River, recorded in the fall of 2018 at Tower 93, part of Mid-American Energy North English Wind Farm. Special thanks to Bill Nosbisch, who led us up the turbine. He's manager of wind generation engineering and asset management at Mid-American. If you're interested in getting a sense of the experience that we had, there's an 80-foot tower at the Iowa State Fair that anyone can climb. We've also put pictures and video from inside the turbine at our website, iowapublicradio.org. And a shout-out of thanks to my brother John for the use of his GoPro. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for coming along.
I was elected the majority leader.
This amendment broadens the scope of the bill.
What will this bill do to turn that around?
During the legislative session, Iowa Public Radio produces a weekly podcast.
We just want to make sure that it is something that is sustainable.
These are proven programs that work.
From committees to chambers, follow the path of bills and policies.
This bill lays out transparency in the process.
How can you say that with confidence?
The podcast, Under the Golden Dome, returns in January. Subscribe now for the 2019 legislative session.